condemned insurgents by the infamous mass drownings known as Noyades, in which hundreds of people were bound hand and foot and pushed out into the Loire in holed boats. In the early months of 1794, the Republic responded to the rebels' continuing guerrilla campaign with a scorched-earth policy which resulted in thousands more deaths and reduced great tracts of the Vendée to a wasteland. At the end of the process, the area was renamed Vengée, avenged. An ideological campaign unfolded alongside the military one. From November 1793, the authorities endorsed the comprehensive de-Christianization of France. The armies advancing on Federalist strongholds sacked churches as they went, and local communities were encouraged to do the same. A new word, vandalism, was introduced to the language as, from one end of the country to the other, places of worship were ransacked and Christian artifacts heaped onto bonfires. Local authorities expunged the word saint from street and place names. Villages once named after Christian martyrs were renamed after Marat. In Paris, the great cathedral of Notre-Dame was officially redesignated the Temple of Reason. A revolutionary calendar was introduced, counting time not from the birth of Christ, but from the birth of the Republic. The people of France suddenly found themselves in year two of a new era. They also had to get used to a 10-day week and a new set of months, with names based on their seasonal characteristics. The spring months, for example, became Germinal, Floréal, and Prairial, budding, flowering, and meadows. By the time they first came round in 1794, there was hardly a church left open in France. But de-Christianization was controversial, even at the top. Robespierre, for one, disliked it, and he was rapidly emerging as the strongest figure on the Committee of Public Safety. It contributed to the impression that the localities were once again running out of control, this time from an excess of terrorist zeal. Power must be brought back to the centre. Accordingly, on the 4th of December 1793, the Convention passed a decree known from its date in the new calendar as the Law of the 14th of Frimaire. Under it, the Committee of Public Safety became the effective government of the country and immediately set about micromanaging the terror. What followed was one of the murkiest periods of the Revolution. While there had been Girondins and Federalists to oppose, the Jacobin coalition had held together. Now it began to fall apart. During the first quarter of 1794, politics was dominated by a new split. This time it was between the so-called indulgents, who believed that the terror had gone far enough, and the Hébertists, who wanted still more of it. Supporters of Danton, one of the most radical of radicals, aligned themselves with the indulgents. Allegations of corruption and conspiracy flew back and forth, compounding accusations of political impurity. On the 13th of March, Robespierre cut the Gordian knot. The leading Hébertists, including Hébert himself, were rounded up. After a show trial conducted by the arch-prosecutor of the terror, Fouquier-Tinville, they were guillotined in the Place de la Révolution on the 24th. With them died the power of the sans-culottes, which had been the driver of Paris politics for the past 2 years. From now on, the capital would be answerable to the Convention, and not the other way round. Less than a week later, it was the turn of the indulgents. Danton and his supporters were arrested on the 30th of March, and on the 5th of April, they too went to the guillotine. After Danton's death, revolutionary government was increasingly made in the image of one man, Robespierre. De-Christianization was reined in and replaced with a cult of the supreme being, the political theology of which Robespierre explained to the Convention on the 7th of May. A festival of the Supreme Being was held on the 8th of June, the 20th of Prairial, complete with grandiose speeches by Robespierre, who inaugurated proceedings by ceremonially torching an effigy of atheism. Famously incorruptible himself, for Robespierre the foundation stone of the Republic was virtue. But revolutionary government, he told the Convention, required virtue and terror. Virtue without which terror is fatal, terror without which virtue is impotent. What this meant in practice became clear 2 days after the festival, when the law of the 22nd of Prairial was passed. The law streamlined the procedures of the Revolutionary Tribunal, reclassifying opponents of the revolution as enemies of the people, a term defined so loosely that it could cover almost anyone. It also removed such obstacles in the judicial path as defence counsels and witnesses. Death was the only sentence permitted. Over the next 6 weeks or so, in what has become known as the Great Terror, more than 1,500 people went to the guillotine in Paris. No one knew who would be next. In the atmosphere of fear that pervaded the city, opinion began to turn. Why were so many dying? National security no longer demanded it. The civil war was all but finished, and on the 26th of June, France gained a decisive victory over the Austrians at Fleurus. Gradually, the mutterings that had been heard against Robespierre at the Festival of the Supreme Being hardened into concerted opposition. On the 26th of July, Robespierre tried to root out the gathering conspiracy against him. Appearing at the convention for the first time in weeks, he launched into an intemperate 2-hour speech, denouncing unspecified traitors and threatening a new purge of the deputies. His enemies knew it was now or never. When he reappeared at the convention the following day, Robespierre found himself denounced as a tyrant and was shouted down when he tried to reply. The floodgates of opposition were suddenly opened. His arrest was called for, together with that of Saint-Just and his other associates, and they were taken into custody the same afternoon. It was the 27th of July, the 9th of Thermidor in the Republican calendar. Had the Parisian municipal authorities rallied to him, Robespierre might have been saved. But at this critical juncture, his supporters in the radical networks of the city failed to come together. What they did do made matters worse. They refused to keep the arrested men in the city's prisons, and took them to the Hôtel de Ville instead. The convention could therefore say they had escaped, which meant they were outlaws and could be executed without trial as soon as they were rearrested. Just after 1 o'clock in the morning, the convention's forces, under the command of Napoleon's future patron, Paul Barras, burst into the Hôtel de Ville. Robespierre tried to shoot himself, but only succeeded in shattering his jaw. For the remainder of the night and most of the next day, he lay semi-conscious on a table at the Committee of Public Safety, whose meetings he had dominated for so long. On the evening of the 28th of July, amid scenes of raucous celebration, he and his cohorts were taken to the guillotine. When the executioner tore the bandages from Robespierre's jaw, a terrible scream echoed round the Place de la Révolution.